Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never. And that debt is fraud. I can dive into that, but actually we're going to have a special interview today with basically a provider, a doctor. I call her Cynthia, and we'll let her kind of explain a little bit of her history, because she definitely offers a lot, but actually a huge amount, and she's actually a producer for the show. I will save that for that conversation that's coming up and future conversations, because I hope to have her back. And before I get into, because I promised that I wanted to cover on each of the Monday and Friday shows criticism of Trump, if you want to call it that, what Trump should be doing and what he is doing, whether, you know, I'm seeing it line up with the Constitution or not. And at this point in time, I don't see that happening. As a matter of fact, his appointments just seem to be going towards previous swamp dwellers. And so there's one that I want to focus on, because, you know, we want to focus on a very constitutional aspect of, I forgot to mention something. By all means, those who practice, you know, spiritual processes or use your spiritual tools, prayer, those types of things, by all means, use everything, all the tools that you have in trying to help reclaim the Republic. This show is not about entertainment. This show is not about trying to, you know, give you the history, giving you shock and that type of stuff. That's what all the other shows are for. You know, there's the shock jocks, those who, you know, want to talk about the conspiracies, those who, you know, want to give you information that actually doesn't get us across the finish line. I mean, yeah, it's nice to know that they're stealing our elections, but I mean, who couldn't state the obvious? I think anybody can state the obvious. The problem is stating what is the solution and how does that solution work, which is what, you know, that's my focus. I've tried to take an academic approach, and I ask anybody, read Why Counties Matter Most. Read my articles on the Constitutional Articles page, from What Is the Real Problem to Martial Law in the 21st Century to The Unseen Teeth in the Constitution, and now Why Counties Matter Most. And we've got two more articles coming out. I'm working on them. I haven't added a word to the next article for probably 2 months, just because too busy and got too many distractions. So hopefully in the next couple of months, with the winter time, and hopefully we don't get lots of snow, then the less snow we get, the more I can get work done. So anyway, because that's the only thing that really takes me out of my normal routine for the day, is having to displace snow because it piles up like crap. So anyway, the focus for today is the invasion, because this is a real threat to our security. I am going to tell you, this isn't hyperbole. As a matter of fact, I've stated this before, and it's actually in our First Amendment petition, that Yale and Harvard in 2018, and these are progressive schools, so there's no doubt in my mind they were downplaying how many illegals or invaders are in America. And they said, I believe, somewhere between 18 and 21 million. I think it was more like 21 million. And that was in 2018. And since then, I mean, Congress and the swamp tied his hands in keeping the invasion going, even though he could put up some policies that slowed it down. It didn't mean that it completely stopped. And when Biden took over, it was open borders and they couldn't get enough people in here fast enough. And we're talking about, they're saying that they've probably added, what, 10 more million, and with the 10 million or the 21 million, based on the the progressive numbers that are highly suspect to not counting the full magnitude. And I say that because during the Bush administration, they were already talking about 20 to 30 million already here, which is the DACA, some of the amnesty and those types of things. So when we really understand how many people, because they say we have about 330 million now, people in the United States. If that's the case, and we have 50 million, then we probably only have 280 million citizens or less. So we got a problem. When you do the percentages, 50 million is what, 6% of 300 million, right? Something like that. So not 60%, I'm sorry. It is one-sixth. It's one-sixth, so it's not 25%, but it's a big number still. That's a big number. If it's higher than that, then we've got real problems, folks. So what has, and when we kind of look at what the Biden administration and these other really progressive, like Obama and so forth, Clinton, when they started opening up these borders, they actually started bringing in, and that's only the invaders. What about the people that were brought here unconstitutionally, like the Haitians and people from all other nations under what we call the unconstitutional refugees? Because we have the federal government has no authority in the Constitution to allow refugees in the United States. That is not in the Constitution. They cannot grant, block migration of a nation. That would have been antithetical. Let me just say this. You know, had the Federalists said, hey, don't worry, we've got a real, you know, this Constitution is going to really keep things locked down, because the federal government is going to be able to bring in a whole nation of people, you know, large populations of people to plop throughout the United States. Because I'm telling you, the states would have said, no way, no how. We're not going to allow that to happen. We're not going to allow the federal government, especially if it becomes hostile to liberty and to the intent and the concepts and principles that founded this nation, the union, what the states were trying to do in creating a union to protect themselves. Remember, the federal government wasn't designed to engineer the union in the way they wanted to make it fit in the world. And the only reason they started doing that is because we've been infiltrated, because our government has been co-opted as a part of the globalists. We are leading. We are the integral leaders of the globalist plan, because we're the big bully, supposedly. We have all this power. Everybody looks at, and all of our power is being controlled and manipulated by very evil people. And so the fact that I've been able to say these things over the past several years with right here on Red State Talk Radio, because I've been here for what, 5, 6, 7 years now? So whatever it is, the fact that I've been able to say these things is kind of amazing, because obviously they don't see any traction coming out of this. They don't see any traction of you, because if that happens, then I may just go away. But the reality is this, folks. This show is about giving you the information and what you need to know and how to take this country back. We talk about common law, not in the essence of the romance of common law under the theocracy of Britain. We talk about common law in direct relationship to the Constitution. We even inform you that the Constitution did not declare common law. It wasn't intended to. It was a constrained law that the federal government would maintain. It would be able to interface with the state's cases of common law, but it didn't establish common law. And it respected and supported and was there to support the state's common law, which is why the Seventh Amendment exists. Because the intent was to ensure that the states did this. But let me get back into this focus, because I only got about 2 minutes left, and we're going to have the interview with Cynthia. So in accordance with the Constitution, we've got this new guy coming in as the border czar, Tom Homan. Will he deport all the invaders from the states, or will he only be focused on criminals? What is he going to do? Because I believe his hands are tied, and it's going to be this facade of, oh, we're doing great things. Again, in accordance with the Constitution, all invaders must be repelled, not, you know, given amnesty, be in process and naturalized. No, invaders, people that come here and violate the law to get here, must be repelled. So those who have been granted amnesty, they should be deported as well, since amnesty is another thing that is not delegated in the Constitution. The federal government has no authority to grant amnesty, and they are the ones that are responsible for calling up the militia to deport, to repel all invaders. They are responsible of having a uniform law of naturalization. And had they actually made amnesty a natural law, then I'm telling you, the states, if that was the case, that became a legitimate law under Congress, then the states would stand up and say that violates the whole concept of immigration. Immigration is a process between an individual and the gatekeeper of a nation. They basically have to request that they can come here. A whole bunch of people sitting out in the middle of the desert, or sitting, you know, in a dense jungle, you know, a tropical forest or a tropical jungle, what have you, and they need to be, you know, brought in so that they have an opportunity to be assimilated. That is not in the federal government's purview. They don't have the authority to do that. So the bottom line is Trump and his border czar going to follow the Constitution or not? Because if they start deporting, they need to be calling upon the state governors to literally start deporting people, getting the governors to call up their militia. They need to use their militia. They need to restore their militia. And that's the other integral part that Trump actually has to start with. He actually has to say, we're not going to be calling on the National Guard anymore and the National Air Guard. We want you to actually take back your militias and start controlling them, because it's an integral part of the Constitution. Now, we're going to come back here. Actually, we're going to bring Cynthia in here in just a second. And so when we start this interview, this is going to be dialogue of what we believe you need to hear. So let me just kind of introduce at this point Cynthia. All right, folks, I actually have Cynthia, who is technically she actually helps produce the show. She goes after like-minded people to try to get them on. As a matter of fact, I will even give her credit. She's the one that helped me interview Todd Callender on the show. And correct me if I'm wrong, Cynthia, welcome to the show. I know you've actually McKibbins was another one, Michael McKibbins. So that's two that I can think of off the top of my head, and there may be a lot more. But yeah, Harry the Greek. That's true. Absolutely. Thank you. And so, folks, the only reason I've been able to bring in these people that have obviously a level of information that is important and nice to know and helpful, all due to her. So, welcome to the show. And
thank you so much.
Yeah, so let me kick things off and basically let everybody know that you're a physician, and if you could give a little bit of background on, you know, your experience as a physician and kind of how we got connected, if you want to do that at a high level, that'd be great, because then everybody can kind of see what you've gone through and where we are today. Go ahead.
Well, I'm a child of a veteran from World War II who retired at 20 years with brain damage of unclear etiology. And in looking at that issue, I became aware that our government hides information from the physicians and it hides it from the veterans. And I eventually went to medical school and discovered that my father thought it might have been due to chemicals on the farm, or it might have been due to nuclear explosions in the Pacific, where he was part of the team there. And I eventually had a practice, a very busy practice, and then I actually went into a form of brain damage myself, which was partly due to some genetics that had been misunderstood and misdiagnosed by my fellow physicians. And I was a wealthy person with lots of resources and lots of standing in the community, and I realized that what happened to me could happen to almost anyone. And when I went to the textbooks, I realized the textbooks were deliberately wrong, deliberately inaccurate. And when I tried to expose that, I ended up with attempts on my life, and I fled my home state. And in my pursuit of trying to find justice, I came across GR's work, and I realized that our Constitution, if honored, would have prevented most of these problems, because our government is in the business of protecting wealthy corporations that are probably owned primarily by people from Europe and Asia. And the only way through all of this, I believe, is the program GR has with Republic Review. And so a lot of my work is trying to find ways to interest more groups of people in putting this effort into work. And so I'm out here on the West Coast where people are very liberal, and I discovered that GR said the law schools are not teaching the ratification documents, the ratification debates. And so there's no way the practicing lawyers can be helpful. And I'm wondering how we can bring them into bring these people up to speed. So I call in sometimes. I encourage people to do this. Find shows where people can call in. And when they obviously don't understand the Constitution, call in and say so and explain to them politely how it works and put in a plug for GR, for reclaimingtherepublic.org. So in doing some of this, I kept coming across someone who said, well, the Bankruptcy Act of 1933 means that we're not supposed to be following the Constitution. And I went, how is this? So I asked GR, did they actually put our federal land, which, of course, do not belong to the feds, according to GR, did they actually put them on the line in the bankruptcy so they're at risk of being handed over to foreign entities? Please, GR, please help me through this.
Okay, so not a problem. So what happened a long time ago, this is why we're going to go through the Organic Act and the treaty with Britain, because that is when the government really, when I say the government, the public servants that were serving literally deviated. They had no authority to do what they did, and they took on a treaty, and they basically created an act that would transform the government unconstitutionally into corporations. Now, most people, because they've just believed the lie, because the reason why, and let me just go on. Most people, because they believe the lie, believe the 14th Amendment did this. And they're doing that because the 14th Amendment is a huge problem for the progressives and the globalists. One of the biggest parts, and I try to teach this, is Section 3. Section 3 is the most important add-on to the Constitution, bar anything, from the original seven articles. More important, but what it does is it applies all the privileges and immunities that the federal government has to maintain, and it applies them to the states. But bottom line, when they created the Organic Act in 1871, post the 14th Amendment, this is when they actually started doing things that were completely unconstitutional. They didn't have the authority. This is when the court actually started redefining the 14th Amendment, redefining laws so that they could deliberately oppress the blacks, so they could literally create a racist nation. This was being done at the behest of Britain and other globalists who had even deeper and darker designs for America. But bottom line, they started doing things that they had no authority. And technically, I don't know the date or the when, but America has gone bankrupt a couple of times, or at least they claimed bankruptcy. And so when we look at the reason they claimed bankruptcy, because it was due to the debt that they carried on spending money that they didn't have. Or I should say, more importantly, they spent money they didn't have the authority to spend money on. When the federal government started spending money on the railroads and the land and everything else, that's not enumerated. So they actually started creating debt after we got out of debt because of Madison Monroe, and Jackson took the credit for it. But as we started moving down this path of starting to spend, they said, you know, shoot, we can keep on doing this. Well, the Civil War kind of compounded our debt problem, but technically it relieved us from ever having to pay the debt of the Civil War. Bottom line, Britain invaded us with money and corrupted our politicians. By 1870, they took over, and this is what started putting us into these financial ruins and all of the problems, because they were functioning as a corporation to support Britain's agenda. And so when they spend money on healthcare, when they spend money on, you know, saving children, as nice and noble as those things seem to be, they're deliberately spending money to bankrupt us. This is why we're looking at this globalist pending doom, because when America falls, we already seen this before when we've had financial problems, it ripples around the world. And so in the 1930 debt fiasco, that was all due to the fact that they were spending money on government programs, whether it be Social Security, it doesn't matter. They were spending money like spendthrift, right? Isn't it spendthrift? Somebody that's just throwing money around. And they don't have the authority to do anything other than for war. And the reason that they actually went into these wars so they could spend more money. They were literally trying to collapse us. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I think they set us up with bubbles for failure.
Yes, right? Yes, absolutely. So go ahead.
You have to take all that into consideration, that they are deliberately doing things that then have a negative, that they can say, oh, you guys they'll poison us with chemicals, fluoride, mm-hmm. whatever.
Right.
And then when we don't behave in such a way as to be careful with our money,
mm-hmm.
well, we're brain damaged.
Right.
Of course we don't have the reason we should have. We have to take all that into consideration at some point.
So many of the problems they cause and many of the problems, they come along with a solution that's worse than the problem. The run on banks, which was done by Chase, J.P. Morgan. No, it was Chase, I think. Anyway, that run on banks in 1906 caused a huge meltdown of the economy. They started that's what caused the Federal Reserve to be created. They started going down this path of manipulating the dollar by a foreign entity, and they didn't have the authority to do that. Nor did they have the authority to even insure holdings within banks. They didn't have the authority to seize control of the stock market when it's collapsed. Every time we've had a financial calamity, we've actually seen that the people lose wealth and the globalists or the elitist, the manipulators, actually gain wealth. And so every time, like with COVID, we saw that the global billionaires and the top, you know, cream of the crop millionaires did much better than the middle class, and the lower earning people, those who were maybe just getting into the millionaire club, and then all of a sudden they lost that because of COVID. So all of this is done to basically steal the wealth of the people slowly and gradually, and they do it incrementally for different reasons and over different purposes. So it's not necessarily a full-fledged, I mean, COVID was really a full-fledged global financial impact. But there have always been these bubbles that you talk about, whether it's housing, like the 2006 meltdown. And when they created the TARP relief or the TARP bailouts, those were all unconstitutional. The federal government can't write a check for anything other than for those things enumerated. That's it. If they're
spent. So were Stoll seizures by Roosevelt, were those unconstitutional?
Was the what? I'm sorry.
The seizure of gold from citizens.
Oh, absolutely. They don't have the power to basically mandate or take gold or take property from people. As a matter of fact, the Fifth Amendment makes it impossible for them to take any kind of property without just compensation. So, in other words,
so
go ahead.
So why didn't people stand up to that?
because people, by that point in time, because our education system in the late 1800s was under attack. This is when the Fabians came into America, and they actually started teaching, before the concept of Keynesian economics, which is just a flare on socialism, we actually had lots of people going to Germany to learn the Marxist school of economy. And so they were literally coming here, perverting our economic system. They were actually subverting our civics. They were not teaching the Constitution. They actually started teaching misinformation over time. So by the early 1900s, progressivism was in full-fledged force in most all higher education, and it was starting to basically permeate into the education system. And this is why we can actually see a tangible difference between, you know, those who graduated from high school in the 40s, those who graduated from high school in the 50s, 60s, 70s. Every decade, they become less informed and less understanding because it's a gradual process. I mean, today, kids don't even understand basic civics. They don't even understand the Constitution other than the fact that they hate it. They're being taught that it's the problem because that's why kids are getting shot in school.
So the fact that you've been showing that from the very first administration under George Washington, Alexander Hamilton was allowed to set up a bank,
yeah,
which was not within the constitutional limitations,
mm-hmm.
And they've really been committing fraud from the very earliest days.
Well, so the magnitude of fraud was minuscule until probably going into the center of the 1800s, like around late 1820s, 1830s. That's when they really started spending money on things that they just shouldn't have done. Because there were plenty of times where, with Madison, Monroe, and Jackson, they came and said, hey, let's create these road bills to improve the highways and waterways. And all three presidents stated that power doesn't exist in the Constitution. You've got to amend the Constitution. So they were doing a really, really good job in keeping government growth, which is how they actually paid off all of the war debt and everything else by the 1830s. And don't forget, we actually had a huge war that really burned down D.C. I mean, there was a lot of rebuilding that had to happen, and the government basically paid all the debt off from that by the 1830s. As a matter of fact, if you read, and I haven't done this in a while, but I used to do this on the show, I read the inauguration address, the second inauguration address of Monroe, and Monroe was announcing at that point that they were ahead of schedule in paying off the national debt. So in other words, I can prove that Madison and Monroe, they put in motion a mechanism that was going to pay off that national debt. So when Andrew Jackson happened to be in office, he took credit for it. But after that, after they paid off that, they kind of renewed the banks after that. That is when they started spending money for the railroads. That is when they started spending money in bailing out people, spending money on health care. I believe they created the first Children's Health Bureau in the 1880s, a little later. But you can see how they were creating the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Interior first in 1849. Right. And so all of these different... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I understand from listening to people who are knowledgeable about the War of Northern Aggression, that Virginia was actually a separate country by the time Abraham Lincoln ordered an invasion. And I believe you said that the Senate did not agree. And so he actually committed a major constitutional violation. And he printed greenbacks, which created debt. While he was paying out the gold from the treasury to his buddies in the railroad industry to build a railroad across the territory. Is that all correct?
Yeah, so most of that's correct. During the Civil War, he instituted income tax to help pay that debt. And
which was not constitutional, was it?
That kind of direct tax was not. It had to have been apportioned. Correct. It was, but the income tax, that was like the first time income tax started to get chewed and pushed around so that the government could start, you know, directly taxing people. And over time, it got challenged, or they would institute it. Nobody would notice it. Then all of a sudden it would, hey, hold on here. You can't do that. And there were actually some court rulings that basically says, yeah, you really can't do that, which is what forced the 16th Amendment. But when the South seceded, every single state that seceded, and I don't know if Virginia actually seceded formally. There were four states that seceded, and I can look it up if you want while you make your next comment, but there were four states that formally seceded. The other states didn't secede because Lincoln wasn't going to take their papers. He said, you can't secede, you can't leave this union, and I won't let you. And he violated the Constitution in saying that. Technically, the southern states had every reason to secede because the Constitution was being violated and the northern states were using those violations to hurt the southern states. Now, when you read, so the northern aggression was really financial. There were tariffs that they were putting on products and so forth that directly was impacting them and their bottom line. So they were getting very good at attacking them. And this is when John C. Calhoun, in the 1830s, John C. Calhoun came along with this perversion of what Madison and Jefferson did called the doctrine of nullification, where they were just not going to abide by the laws. They were going to import these things. They weren't going to pay the tariffs. They said, heck with you. And it just got worse and worse as they were ignoring. And bottom line, Madison was correct that when they nullify, it doesn't solve the problem. It only does is creates chaos, which instantly, or actually over time, kept on growing and growing into such tension that the southern states finally seceded. Now, there were four states that seceded. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I will just pretend that while they were collecting these tariffs, which were injurious to the South, they were spending money that they were not allowed to spend on improvements in the North. And I want to express some concern here because Abraham Lincoln did many unconstitutional things, and I am understanding that Trump has said that he is going to pick up where Abraham Lincoln let off and basically continue his programs. And so I have very much concern that we must get the young people on board to go back into the Constitution and get full compliance with it in order to prevent unconstitutional behaviors.
Right. Now,
sorry to throw that in there.
No, that's okay. It's okay because I'm not a fan of Trump. And as a matter of fact, if you didn't hear my show last week, this week I was actually going to start, but I'm interviewing you instead. This week, I was going to start actually identifying things that Trump has to do. If Trump doesn't do these things, then he's not making, I mean, he's not going to fulfill his promises of making America great. And so these are all going to be based on those 13 shows that I said, this is what a constitutional president, in other words, if you've got a president that is abiding and literally enforcing the Constitution, I mean, if Madison came in today and he became president just like that, he's going to walk in instead of Trump. There's no doubt Madison would be exercising the powers of the presidency to clean up the government as much as he could. And so I'm going to go through exactly what has to happen so that we can actually get our government back, because the president doesn't have the authority to do it. First, that the most important thing, we do not have a king. Because if he's a king, then when he's replaced in 4 years, the next king can undo everything he did. The states are really the parents in this whole relationship. They have all of the power to force the federal government into compliance and keep them from ever drifting again. That's why we have to get the states to do this. But go ahead.
When you're doing that show, could you come up with some ideas about how we can go out and recruit other people who have not been conservative, that are opposed to Republican rule, to show them that there is something they can do that is totally constitutional?
Yes. And as a matter of fact, First Amendment petitions is the key here, because that is the one action that we can do that I try to create the metaphor. Just imagine that metaphorically you're taking your hand and you're balling your fingers into a fist, and you're walking up to a politician, and you're landing that fist right between their eyes. And they can't, their hands are tied. They can't do anything. They have to let you hit them. That's what a First Amendment petition does. They cannot stop you from petitioning them. Well, they have been, and January 6th was proof of that. They shut down the access of the people to be able to petition them when they went into January 6th. And that was the biggest travesty and the biggest violation of the Constitution, other than the steal of the election. And nobody's talking about that. But then, go ahead.
And the key is to have that paperwork in your hands.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That's proof that that's what you're doing.
You have the right to basically hand that to them. And when you do, you are forcing them to respond. If they don't respond, now, the law is one thing. And we know they're not going to abide by the law because they're corrupt. If you've got a good public servant, they will abide by that. They will try to redress the grievances. But if they're not, they'll say, I don't have to do anything. The lawyers say, I don't have to do anything. Then you can actually, I tell people, you got to capture these videos. Get these guys on film while they're saying this in the public meeting. We don't have to listen to you. We're not going to redress your grievances. Then all we've got to do is just show people that Congress can make no law that abridges our right to assemble and petition them for the redress of grievances, and they just did it. And therefore, now we actually have a public relations campaign that we can start going out and saying, why is this guy in office? He's not even abiding by his oath of office. We have a right to petition him over the invasion, over the spending on transportation, over the chemtrails, all of these. We have a whole bunch of petitions. We're trying to create a national repository so that you can grab anyone you want and start going after, like the one against the UN. Stop the UN. Get us out of the UN. There's no authority to have us in the UN.
Okay. So one approach for that one would be the people on campuses who are opposed to what they say is a Palestinian genocide.
Right.
And the UN is attempting, at least superficially, to stop Israel's behavior. And if we got us out of the UN, which we shouldn't be in the UN anyway because it could violate our sovereignty, then they might be able to grab that and go with it. Even though you don't think of them as constitutionalists, they might suddenly discover that it is.
Yeah,
good idea to be a constitutional.
So the only treaties that they can really create are treaties that end war, or, you know, basically maintain a level of peace that we don't go to war, or because that's, you know, they have the authority over war. They also have the authority. Well, go ahead.
Is the non-proliferation treaty?
So a
Is that one valid?
So a non-proliferation treaty regarding arms and arm races and those types of things? You know, well, I don't know, because I don't believe that they're actually, those types of things are necessarily in the interest of the United States. Typically, those types of treaties are designed to create an advantage for somebody else. And actually, the federal government's job is to protect and maintain our sovereignty so that we will not be vulnerable to any other nation. Now, when we started off, we were very vulnerable. But once we got to a point where we weren't vulnerable, I mean, we don't have to prove that we're not vulnerable, but we have a responsibility to be no vulnerability, period. That is their job, is to maintain that sovereignty, to protect the sovereignty of the nation and the sovereignty of the states. And so they have the ability to create treaties regarding trade, because they do have the right and actually it's their power to regulate trade with foreign nations. So they have that responsibility, but they can't use that as a mechanism of waging warfare against the United States by creating laws that, oh, you can't make these products, we have to buy them. In other words, they can regulate, let me just finish this. They can regulate foreign commerce, but in that same clause, they cannot regulate commerce among the states. The states have free will to regulate their own commerce. The Constitution is clear. They can only regulate among the states, not within. So go ahead. You were going to say something.
So McKibben's group found information on the Pilgrim Society, which was established to bring the United States back into the British control.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they discovered that as early as the founding in 1903, then there were members of the United States Joint Chiefs of Staff participating. And most of our presidents have been members of this.
Uh-huh. Yep.
That's a very tough pill to swallow, but it's reality.
Sure. I understand.
They're trying to bring it back under foreign control.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of military people involved in this.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Not just the dual citizens.
Absolutely. And so,
which are an important issue. What are we going to do about that? How can we attack that issue in a constitutional way?
Okay, so we're actually coming out with a citizenship petition. It's basically kind of under the umbrella of the natural born citizen. But in the citizenship petition, we're going to identify that the states have the original authority over who becomes citizens. And states have the power to strip people of their citizenship. If they're stripped of citizenship from the state, they are automatically stripped citizenship from the United States. The way we can strip citizenship is by those who are actually engaging in an insurgency against the Constitution. Every member of the Pilgrim Society, like Bill Gates, whether he is or not, Bill Gates is clearly out there waging an insurrection against the Constitution by actually doing business with foreign entities and waging warfare, controlling international regulations that affect. I mean, this guy is so beyond. He's made himself as one of the kings of the globalists. And so he is literally waging warfare. He should actually lose his citizenship, and he actually should be deported, and we should seize his wealth, just like the Tories. Go ahead.
I think he needs to be publicly prosecuted for murder.
Well, so I understand that that's a legal case, but we have precedents with the Tory acts. If you're not going to support the Constitution, we can just deport him. And there, ergo, he can lose all of his assets, all of his stock holdings and everything else, and just deport him. Make him a poor guy going to a country of his choosing. Maybe China.
Oh, I think India wants him already.
but my point is, the states can start stripping these people, and we can deport them, because after the Revolutionary War, we deported all the Tories. 100,000 some odd Tories were deported. And that's precedence right there. If you're not, go ahead.
We didn't catch all of them.
No, I get that.
Alexander Hamilton in time.
I get that. And so we kind of went down this path of tolerance. We tried to be more tolerant with having enemies among us. I mean, we were tolerant, in ways of allowing, believe it or not, our legal system did not allow atheists to participate in obtaining justice, like suing somebody for damages or for stealing something. If you're an atheist, you couldn't get your day of justice in court. I don't know if you knew that. That was a standard process. Alexis de Tocqueville noted that in Democracy of America. Thomas Jefferson was a victim of that, too, because he wasn't a Christian in good standing. He actually went on his own Christian bent, and because he was not attending the Anglican Church when he was in a hearing, basically to determine whether he committed a crime or not, he was not afforded to bear testimony on his own behalf. But because he was an officer of the court, he could ask questions and cross-examine, but he could not bear testimony. So, yeah, I mean, the way this nation was, we weren't very tolerant towards enemies who would lie to us and deceive us. We weren't. And all of a sudden, over time, we became more and more tolerant to allow the liars, the deceivers, and so forth. Like when the Fabians came here, these guys were full-fledged communists. They dedicated their life to help Marxism implant itself and grow around the world. They were a part of the big conspiracy. That was in the 1880s.
Did you know that Abraham Lincoln owned a newspaper that was Marxist?
No, I don't know that, but I mean, I already know too much about the conspiracy to a point where, you know, I just, as you know, I don't care about it. I care about teaching people about the Constitution, because the sooner we get more statesmen, the sooner we get more people out there representing the truth on the Constitution, the faster we're going to start winning these battles and winning the battles of getting our liberty back and getting our government back. Then once we have that, then you can have your justice. You can find those people, because I don't know if I'll be alive then. Hopefully I will. Hopefully I'll actually see this nation restored, and this nation restore itself and its constitution and be on the right track again. I'd love to see that. But, you know, I've been in this for well over a decade doing this specifically, and there's lots of organizations out there that I fight. You know, people hear me complain about the John Birch Society. They're always trashing me. You want to hear something bad about me? Go talk to them. So,
well, we need to think about how we convert them originalists.
Yeah, and so you'll go talk to a member, and 9 times out of 10, if they look at what I'm doing and so forth, they go, hey, this guy's on. I like this guy. But it's the leadership, because when all of a sudden you recognize that what we're doing will destroy your organization, because what are you going to do if all of a sudden government starts behaving? What is Sean Hannity going to do if government behaves and we have all of our liberty and everything's good and hunky-dory? What, is he going to complain about something else? Go ahead.
We know that all the organizations get infiltrated.
Yes, most all of them have. Most all of them have, one way or another, some more than others. But the way we know that organizations are co-opted is when you start making it about money, which is one of the reasons why I don't have a money-based organization. People, you're more than welcome to help, but I'm not going to pay you, and you need to be able to do this on your own. And I've known lots of people that have had problems with that. Are you kidding me? I've got to put a roof over my head. And I go, okay, well, go do what you need to do. And forgive me for saying this, but if you're doing good, then I think you're going to be blessed and you'll actually have the financial whatever to do what you can do for the nation in serving of your fellow man and for humanity, right?
Well, yes. And one thing that I think communities need to do is start getting together a list of questions that to hand off to the candidates running for office to verify that they understand the Constitution.
Yes, so
they should probably turn loose the youth before they go to college, saying, please come up with some questions that we can use. Do a contest in the community.
Yes, I think that we need to come up with tests, very vigorous tests, to test legislators, to test jurists, to test executives, so that we clearly know that they understand the Constitution. Because once we've tested them and they step into office and they actually do something, that they answered the test question correctly, that they couldn't do that, and then we just go right up to them and say, hey, on this answer, on question 7, you clearly knew that you didn't have the authority to do this, governor, and now you're doing it. You need to step down because you're violating your oath, because you understand that. Because once we start using the 14th Amendment in Section 3, anybody that crosses the line, we can get to a point where we have a zero tolerance attitude. But we have to get to that point. We actually have to, because most people don't even understand it to that point. And so when we, the people, understand it, then we would doggone well make sure that those who represent us understand it as well. So we got about 5 minutes left. Is there something more you want to dive into, other topics, questions? I don't want to terminate the conversation now, but I just want to let you know we got about 5 minutes.
Well, I just want to point out that when I was in medical school in the 1970s, I was totally unaware of the alternative healthcare movement. I would have started questioning what they were teaching me and what they weren't teaching me. So I think that people need to think about going to approaching the law school students about why were they not taught about the ratification debate. I think they need to lead with it at schools. They need to signage. They need to be proactive, because those kids are some of the best and the brightest. They're actually typically much brighter than the people accepted in the medical school. Surprise, surprise.
Right. So
they need a heads up that they're being led down a path that is not a good path.
And actually,
so I want to encourage people to think about maybe sending you ideas about what they've done that got the attention of these students.
So I actually write articles. And in Why Counties Matter Most, I've gotten, I don't want to say praise, but I've gotten a lot of great feedback on that article where people are using that to help educate people. The next article I'm going to write is talking about the different paths of resistance. The court and the law, or enforcement in the court system, is one of those paths of resistance. And in that, I am clearly going to out Hamilton. And I'm going to prove what Hamilton did by planting the Federalist Papers to be the only legal document source that they're to look at in trying to understand the Constitution. Literally gave them the construction of the Constitution that was absolutely a perversion. Because it was in the Federalist Papers where Hamilton injected the ability to interpret the law, and that is not constitutional. And Hamilton deliberately changed, or actually induced, I think 7 or 8 documents. It'll all be in this article where I will show that these Federalist Papers were added after the Constitution had been ratified. So, in other words, they have no bearing. They should not even ever be cited. And as a matter of fact, the only legal standing for understanding the Constitution in accordance with the tenets of basically Madison and the rest of the framers that were true to the Constitution, unlike Hamilton, are the ratification debates. And so, yeah, you're right. Absolutely. But the courts and the jurists and those who go to law, the only documents that they use are the Federalist Papers, because it actually empowers them to pervert the law. This is why most lawyers look to figure out how they can twist and bend to create new law. And that's a challenge for them to, you know, like taking taffy and make, it's like an art for lawyers. That is their art in making new law. And actually the Constitution does not give them the ability to do that.
Those people that studied the ratification debates would help out the rest of us,
mm-hmm,
by giving us a cheat sheet of the best parts of it, that you know, the best snippets that we can use to document our stand.
So on the academic source documents, let me just kind of close on this because we got about a couple minutes left. On the academic source documents page, I actually have our copies. Now, you can verify that these haven't really been edited in any way in context. They've been edited for formatting, and they've been edited in highlighting. The words have not been edited. If it's a misspelled word, it's still a misspelled word. But we do highlight, like the common law, when they're talking about common law, or when they're talking about the currency, or when they're talking about, you know, necessary and proper, whatever it is that they're talking about, we have these little notes, so you can actually go in the navigation pane, click on that, because it's a Word document, and you can go to that part of the Constitution, read this highlighted part, and you go, oh my, oh wow, that is not what we're doing today. And so we actually have these for everybody. I mean, we want everybody to become prolific and very proficient in understanding the Constitution. So, any saving rounds or comments, any final comment?
No, thank you, GR.
No, thank you for coming on. And I'd actually like to, you know, bring you on because you're a great sounding board in going out and dealing with those people. Because when I say those people, that seem to be unknowing and highly or quickly triggered. Sorry about that. Quickly triggered in ways that, you know, one would not expect. But anyway, thank you so much for coming on.
Bye.
And so, folks, I hope you garner that having Cynthia on, she brings up points and things that are imperative that will help. And actually, so my response is in helping identify what we're already offering. You can't listen to every show in 1 hour. And I can't cover all of the different things in an hour or even in a week. Well, you know, why do I do this? Why is this there? Those types of details. It takes time to go through all of this. And so bottom line, as you know, it takes time to fill sandbags. I just want you to know, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic. And with people like Cynthia and your help, we can actually get this done. God bless.